Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones, and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade, setting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool.
Yeah, I know, I can't whistle.
For whistling like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by.
Not bad, Robert. Not bad.
About it.
The time of day.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
I like it. I like that one.
I just enjoy that. I don't know.
Just puts a nice smile on your face. Kind of really, gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling.
It really does. I mean, it's like, yeah, warm and fuzzy. I don't know. It's just, it's a happy thing. So, Radio Fishing, we're here. Back again.
Not a bad thing.
Kind of still on the hit and miss, getting caught up, doing everything, and trying to get everything right and wrong. You talked to one of the two captains today. What's going on in the harbor? And it seems to have been holding up for the last few days, and something to do with incoming tide.
Yeah, I mean, and you even talked about it with the incoming tide with the salt water. You know, a lot of those fish are following that tide, you know, that tidal flow coming in because of the high salinity, and mainly like Spanish mackerel in particular, a lot of the small sharks and tarpon. And it also seems to be increasing the feed on a lot of the fish too, even on the west, well, a little bit on the west wall because it's still fairly bad over there, but the east wall.
Well, I can tell you just from personal experience, when you don't feel good and you're just not up to par, which a saltwater fish living in freshwater, I'm assuming, would have that same basic feeling, just kind of off a little bit. And I really didn't feel like eating, and I think the fish are kind of the same way. And then all of a sudden you get this burst of nice, cool, salty water coming in on that incoming tide, comes out of the Gulf, splashes at east side, and
you know what, you might
just
be
lights
onto,
it all up.
You might be onto something there, too, though, in a more deeper perspective of that. Salt water is denser than fresh water.
Yes.
Maybe it chases their barometric pressure inside of them. Maybe it plays a little bit of a key there.
Could be everything from this. What we're talking about is a swim bladder on a fish. If you live underwater, you have a bladder, and it's just a big sack. And when they expand it, it makes the fish lighter in the water. When they contract it, it makes them heavier, and they sink. They're not as buoyant. But can you imagine the micro changes it would take to go from, like, say, you're sitting in, you know, 2 inches off the bottom,
and
you
want to come up to
6 inches. You know what I mean?
Same concept.
Yeah, but, I mean, it would be a radical change. Just, you know, the tiny, tiny micro pressure in buoyancy difference between sitting at 6 inches off the bottom and sitting at 2 feet off the bottom.
Yeah.
Just to be able to raise up and stay there and then sink down and stay there. The little tiny changes in that you would have to make, you know,
right,
contracting the muscles, expanding the muscles to make all that happen. It's really staggering when you
right,
think of how a fish is designed.
Absolutely.
And if you change the pressure outside of the fish, that's going to change the pressure inside that swim bladder. Kind of like the best way I think to describe it is getting in an airplane, and you're sitting on the runway and the plane takes off, and as it's rising so rapidly up, you know, you're going up to 40,000 feet
quickly,
and your ears are changing and everything becomes uncomfortable, and you know, and it affects some people more than others.
Absolutely.
But if you're wondering what we're talking about and how you would equate yourself to that, try taking off or landing on a major jet, and that's got pressure in the cabin to try and keep everything equalized.
Right.
But still, that's
it takes sometimes for that plane to catch up. That's why your ears pop, your eyes kind of feel a little puffy.
Yeah. I mean, everything changes on you. And you ever notice people eat before they get onto planes? How many people get off the plane and go, gee, I'd like a meal right now?
Right. Exactly.
I mean, to me, I watch people, you know, at the airports. I spent years flying back and forth to Europe. I was selling tackle for a company over there. And I've spent countless hours sitting in airports waiting to, you know, go to one country or another, whatever country I was going to at the time. and watching people in airports, and really it's true. 80% of the people who do get a meal do so waiting for the plane.
Right.
Not afterwards.
Right.
Yeah.
Usually it's a couple hours afterwards for you to wind down and just feel a little bit better overall.
So the fish, you got to have that same experience.
Yeah, I would think so.
So you might be right. That could be another one. I've never factored in the difference in density and buoyancy between freshwater and saltwater. Much easier to swim in saltwater. You can go out, you can swim probably a third to half again as far in saltwater as you could in freshwater, because the saltwater helps lift you up.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I mean, guys stay alive longer, you know, when they're thrown overboard or their boats sink or things like that. You hear of more saves in the ocean than you do in lakes.
Yeah, because you can swim a lot longer.
Yeah.
You know, you're not having to work as hard. Right, just laying there floating is much easier in saltwater.
More things to eat you in the saltwater, but
yeah, I mean,
if you get past the food chain part of it, you stand a better chance.
Yeah, I think, people are more and more afraid of the water and afraid of what's in the water and everything, even though we have less and less stuff in the water that can hurt you. Me, I'm always concerned about the tiny stuff I can't see.
Right.
I'm okay with the lions and tigers and bears and sharks and all that because I can see them and I can fight that. It's the stuff that's microscopic that scares the heck out of me because I can't fight it.
Right.
You know, if we were ever invaded by, you know, relatively big aliens, I'm not worried about that too much. We get invaded by microscopic aliens, that terrifies me. You know, anything big enough where I can fight, I'm okay with. I either win or lose, but, you know, at least I went down fighting. But when it's a little tiny microscopic thing you can't even see.
Yeah, size of a flea or a no-see-em, we're in problem.
Or the size of a germ.
Yeah, totally different.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know, who's taking bets on pandemic or not pandemic at this point, you know, with all this stuff going on in the world. But, anyway, on a much happier, friendlier note, you are by yourself in the water, and let's face it, if you're out there fishing, you're not coming in contact with anything, you know. Yes. It's not like, you know, drive to Florida in your own little car and go out in your own little boat.
Yeah, exactly. Well, speaking of terrifying things, first time ever that I can remember, a guy came in here this morning that got hammered by a stingray.
Okay. I mean,
full-blown hammered in the hand by a stingray. I've had a lot of guys come in with catfish and go, what do I do? You know, how do I do it?
No, that's nothing new.
That's no big deal. Plenty of phone calls, but just today was the first day I've actually had a guy come in that was hammered by a stingray. I've had the calls, but walk in.
No, I've seen a lot of people come in with stingray wounds.
That was my first.
Yeah?
It was my first.
So what was so terrifying?
Just watching, I mean, just to see the anguish on him, and I mean,
he'd just gotten stung.
Oh yeah, he just got hammered. I mean, he still had the washcloth over his hand and wanting to know what the heck to do.
Best thing,
go to the hospital.
A lot of it boils down to, if you get zapped by a stingray or catfish or anything, really, first thing you want to know is, are you allergic to bee stings? Bee stings, hornet wasp, all these things, how you react to them will a lot of times determine how you react to a zap from a saltwater creature. And if you're allergic to bee stings, if they're bad for you, you better keep your kit with you when you're on the water, because usually if you have an allergic reaction to that, you will have an allergic reaction to the stingray wounds, the catfish and stuff like that. But the problem with a stingray wound or catfish wound is you get zapped, and if it comes back out, you're very lucky, but trying to make sure all the little tiny pieces are back out,
right?
Because there's little pieces that can sit in there and fester, and that can cause a lot of problems. The big thing about it is you're going to go through a lot of pain. There is no doubt about it. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt for a long time. But we open it up with hydrogen peroxide, and this is not something you should do. It's against every doctor's orders in the world, but we pour bleach on it. It doesn't burn like alcohol, and quite honestly, the marine bacteria down here likes alcohol. It thinks alcohol is fun. It's like me. Me and alcohol, we're buddies. You know, I can handle that, you know, and it doesn't seem to bother marine bacteria. It just gets a little loopy and just it goes on its merry way, but bleach knocks it out. So
Right.
Do not use bleach on your wounds. Just because I do doesn't mean you should. But we do hydrogen peroxide to open it up, then pour bleach on it because, well, A, it doesn't burn, and B, it works. But don't you do it. Just don't do as I do as I say, you know,
right.
Covering my butt here. But the one thing about it is if the swelling continues and it starts getting bigger and bigger, the thing about the marine bacteria that I've found is if you get it in a joint, it's bad. Right. It loves the fluid in a joint of a knuckle, a wrist, a finger, toes, elbows, anywhere where there's fluid on the joint, it goes crazy. And I've watched it go from a person's finger into his down to his thumb, his wrist, his elbow, up to his shoulder, and on his way to his brain to kill him because he was too stupid to go to the hospital. Now, you can't fix stupid. And me, it was kind of natural selection. I hate to sound callous about it, but we've been telling him to go to the hospital for over a month. I got to do this, I got to do that. By the time he was in the hospital, they had to cut all his joints open, flush him out. And I mean, it was a huge, huge thing right. that almost killed him. All because he was too stupid to get off his stubborn butt, go to the doctor, get the correct meds, and, you know, you got to have antibiotics to cure bacteria.
Yeah.
And antibiotics are no good in viruses, but they work pretty good if you know what bacteria it is. And the trouble is, if you get stung in Florida, you want to see a doctor in Port Charlotte, preferably like Dave up the walk-in clinic. He knows what the bacteria are and the correct antibiotics mm-hmm. for it. If you go to a doctor up north, you have a very little chance they know what the correct antibiotics are. So,
or at least let them know you call just down here, in Florida.
And we'll give you the name of a doctor who can, you know, tell your doctor what antibiotics to use.
Right,
because they don't all work on this stuff. I don't know why we're in such a morbid phase today, but
yeah.
I guess it's with everything in the news. Everything's morbid right now.
Oh yeah. You know. Oh, it's all doom and gloom.
Yeah, it's all doom and gloom pandemic. So we might as well talk about our little saltwater adventures, and in the big scheme of stuff, you know. But stingray wounds and stuff, all this are very seldom fail unless you work for a wildlife thing and you live in Australia. Then they can be fatal.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Wow.
Poor, yeah, that was terrible, wasn't it?
That was brutal.
I told you. I don't know. I'm in
feeling
a, I'm,
saucy.
No, I'm having a pity party for myself. All the stuff that's gone wrong, I said I'm just going to, you know, get my pity party out of the way, feel bad for myself, and whine for a while.
It's better than climbing up in a clock tower.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I'd rather have you get it over with now than just let it brew for another couple months or years and then
right.
climb in a clock tower and just innocently take shots.
No, I wouldn't do that unless I had a fatal disease, and then it would be somewhere where no innocence could get hurt. I would never yep. do that. I don't care what happened.
Right.
But there's a whole bunch of people in this country that ain't so innocent.
Yeah, there was a couple of them on TV last night having a discussion with each other.
Yeah. Jeez. You've got a fan. I'm not coming.
Yeah, really? Are you kidding me?
I love living here in Southwest Florida, and this is truly one of the greatest places in the world to live. But could it get any more embarrassing? Do we have to have every reject from the United States move here? Every single state north of us, if they fail, they can't do anything, they get thrown out, they do whatever, they come down here and run for office.
Yeah.
No wonder we can't do anything in this state.
Well, that's why it's called Florida.
Yeah, duh. These are the two choices we have for governor. Excuse me, I'm going back to Mickey. Let's, you know, get somebody out of Orlando. I mean, Goofy, Mickey, Minnie,
somebody.
Let anybody run for governor.
Thumper
these two
would
idiots.
Do a better job.
Yeah, well, these are thumpers, you know. Yeah, sorry. But believe us, we are not all like our government. I am sorry that, you know, oh, my God. Can you imagine what the talk shows are going to be? Oh, Saturday Night Live is going to have a field
day
with
this. Oh, I think
so,
too.
Oh, my God. How embarrassing is it to live in Florida? It is the I pick this over any other place I've ever been, but the most embarrassing place to live.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
From a political standpoint, in a heartbeat.
Oh, God. You know, I mean, at least the other governors and people, I mean, they do stuff you expect. They embezzle. They, you know, at least they're smart enough to try and steal something. These idiots, they can't even figure out how to walk on a stage together.
Right.
So anyway, enough ramblings about politics. back to the fishing. Incoming tide, we were talking about. Yep, we're talking about incoming tide. And everything revolves around that fresh, cool water out of the Gulf. Now, keep in mind, folks, by the time you get here, if you're coming down in January or February, you're going to want to look at that outgoing tide. Because right now, we have a lot of fresh water. We still got like 6 feet of extra water coming down the rivers. So yeah,
every bit of that.
It's, yeah, well, no, right now it's 4 to 6 feet. It's been dropping pretty steady. It's maybe down as low as 4. But still, it's a lot of water a second. Yeah. A 4 foot wall of water, you know, 100 yards wide, that's 4 feet tall, 100 yards wide every second coming at you. That's a lot of water.
Yes, it is.
So, and, but that's all fresh. And the problem with the fresh water is not that it's fresh water. It's that the leaves, the plants, you get a little mud and everything else mixed with it. It's very dark colored. And dark colors absorb sunlight. They're a solar collector. You know, you don't try and heat your water by running it through a white bit of plastic. You put it in black, it gets hot. It's just the way the solar stuff works. And so, and we got huge solar flares coming at us right now. They say the Aurora Borealis is going to be unbelievable for the next little while. Huge, they used to call them solar flares. Now it's coronal mass ejection or some stuff like that. There's some kind of ejaculate. I don't know. I'm not going to get into that. But anyway, here they got this solar flares. And, I mean, what was wrong with the terms we grew up with? I mean, what do they think? They're more impressive if they change the name of something? No, you're just stupid. Okay. Anyway, but all this solar radiation, sunlight, heats up the water. Hot water does not hold as much oxygen. And you got fresh water, low oxygen, a lot of fresh water, low salinities. All that makes for not so good fishing on these outgoing tides. But think about it, once the rains quit and the rivers are back down, we're not really getting much flow from the river, if any, and you have all this cool water or cold water coming in out of the Gulf, and it's all salt. Now, the outgoing tide is going to have the same amount of salt as the incoming tide. Usually by December, January, there's no difference in the salinity for as far as incoming and outgoing, but there is a temperature difference.
Definitely.
And what happens is all these little tidal ponds, canals, all this stuff, the water doesn't ever really get that crystal clear up here. And what happens is that brown water collects the sunlight, collects the heat, it's shallow, black, muddy bottoms, and so all that water's warmed up. So when the tide does go out, it sucks all that warm water out into the harbor and activates the food chain at that point.
Right.
So this time of year, incoming tide's way better. In 2-3 months from now, it's going to be the outgoing tide that really rocks everything. Because if you're all chilly and you're cold and, you know, you're sitting around like, boo, this is miserable, and then all of a sudden you get this nice warm thing, again, perks you right up. You're going to feel better. When you feel better, you're going to get hungry.
Right.
So, anyway, how did that take 10 minutes to get that out?
I don't know. It was fun, though.
Yeah. I hope you thought so. I'm not sure. I'm sorry about political viewpoints, but when you get embarrassed, you just get embarrassed.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Anyway, yeah, my poor wife says, we're not going up north. She says, I am not living through the Florida jokes.
Yeah.
It's
going
to be 2 years before we go back up north.
Oh, every bit of that.
That way, we don't have to, everywhere we go, oh, gee, watch out, we've got a fan in here. You're not gonna want to come in. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. How do you guys survive down there without fans?
Yeah. So. Anyway, oh my God, how embarrassing.
Yes.
But back,
well, let's
one of the fish that's
the
really, we're going to do the fishing report on Friday. We'll get the big area fishing report done.
Oh, okay.
I just kind of wanted to go over some of the stuff that's happening right now. A lot of Spanish mackerel, but the big thing, a lot of people still chasing tarpon.
Yeah.
And the key right now is that last half of the incoming tide. You got to be there for that. It means get there at low tide. The incoming comes after the low. If you're there at high tide, it's too friggin' late. It's already going to go out. You got to get there at low tide. Get out at low tide and start fishing on that incoming tide. You want to be there at low tide, work your way in till the tide gets high. And it's still going to be pretty good around that high tide. But once it turns out, you don't have much longer after that.
And it doesn't matter if it's early, early morning, middle of the day, or in the evening, you want to be at that turning of the tide.
You want to be there at the low tide.
It's all about the tide, not the time.
Yeah, and now ladyfish seem to be the best bait. Vinny was in, and I talked to him and Greg, and they're doing great. Just going outside the bar trolling for ladyfish, whether you're using a jig or a Storm Twitch, a 14 bomber, Rapala X-Wrap, get something and get your ladyfish, troll them up live and fresh. That's your best bet. Probably, I would say, come in and spend the $2 to buy frozen ladyfish.
Absolutely.
It's, you're probably not going to use it, but I think unless you make that offering to the gods and show them that you're not arrogant.
Yes.
You know, if you're, you get on a boat and expecting to do everything and catch everything without a hitch, I think Poseidon punishes you for arrogance.
Many times it's done it to me.
I think the safe thing to do is only $2 for ladyfish. I mean, we're making like 40 cents. So, you know, you're not going to make me rich buying one. But if, get your ladyfish, go out and do some trolling. And it seems to be about 4 to 6 feet of water. Let's judge around 5 foot of water outside of a sandbar. It doesn't matter if you were from going from Pont South along the east side, anywhere along the east side from Burnt Storm Marina up to Ponds. You shouldn't have to troll very long before you snag at least one or two. Put two rods out the back. If you have enough holders, you can put a little bit more because you want to whack these fish and get fishing. And it's another key reason you got to get there at that low tide is because you're going to have to find your bait, catch the bait, then get out and get in position to fish. And right now it's all about the drift.
Yep.
And bobbers seem to be the way to go. Floats, bobbers, all this kind of stuff. And put the ladyfish on live. Now, I was talking about on the last show, you like freelining or you like an under a float?
I do both. I usually try to stagger my baits a little bit just like I would if I were trolling. If I can get that one bait free lined and kind of suspend somewhere in the water column, and then the other one about 2 to 4 feet under a bobber.
And then see, me, I like, when I'm using a live ladyfish like that, I like the bobber to mark where it is. I want to know where it is.
Yeah, but I use them live or dead. I don't care.
So my dead one, I wouldn't mind free lining, but every time I put a live one on, it finds the other line.
So does a thread fin.
And thread fins,
I'll always bobber them because they're really bad about it.
Yeah, they're schooling fish, so as soon as I find or hear another one, they go right to it.
Right, absolutely.
And they always wrap up together, so. But ladyfish aren't quite as bad, but still bad. That's why usually I'm under floats, and I just drop one about 6 feet down below the bobber. And if I've got a dead one, I'm going to freeline that one always.
Right. Yeah, that's just been my usual tactic. And then sometimes, another cool trick that actually Robert taught me a few years back is putting a storm or a bait buster under a bobber also. And just letting it drift out there.
Well, the nice part about it is called bobber jigging, because every little wave that hits it lifts your bait up and down in the water, and your plastic bait now is self-swimming. It's, you know, a self-fulfilling bait prophecy. It does not work on exceptionally calm day, folks. You got to have a little light chop on the water. The calmer it is, the less you want to hang an artificial under a bobber. But if it's a little rough, think of that. It's sitting there being jigged, and the waves bounce the bobber up and down, pulls the bait up, pulls the lure up and down. It's a great idea, and it's a lot less work.
Absolutely.
Now, do you want your ladyfish cut whole, live, dead? What do you want?
I want it whole, and live or dead. I'm happy either way, as long as I've got a ladyfish. Because, I mean, you taught me years ago, and it's bit me in the butt a few times where I've opted not to get bait, even though everything in my body's telling me, Frank does this, and this is why you do this. But there's been a few times where I haven't brought frozen bait with me, whether it's shark or tarpon. But I have no problems using a frozen ladyfish or a dead ladyfish.
If I'm using a dead one, it's best not to cut it into pieces. What's your opinion on butterflying?
Butterflying's okay, but the problem is that it's much easier for some of those big sail cats to swallow them. At least if it's whole, they'll only mess with it. They usually don't get to swallow it. Because I don't care if it's a 10-inch ladyfish or a 24-inch ladyfish. When they're butterflied, they can sometimes fold it over and swallow the darn thing.
I was going to say, if you're not familiar with butterflying, you may be familiar with how to fillet a fish. But butterflying is starting at the tail of the fish and then cutting sideways along there so that the strip stays attached. You do not remove the slabs of meat, but you're cutting from the tail straight into the body of the fish up about halfway. And then you flip it over and do the same thing on the other side. So what you have is the backbone and the meat above and below the backbone going to the tail, the same thickness as the tail. But now the sides of the fish can open and drift in the current.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, I think it just releases more smell into the water, more
Absolutely.
Of the oils, more of the meat exposed. But it also does create a little bit of noise when you're drifting because those flaps move back and forth. Kind of gives it a swimming action,
mm-hmm.
maybe even a slight slapping together sound.
Oh, it can be very productive. I've just gotten so frustrated with the catfish. If the catfish aren't that bad, I don't mind butterflying it. For sharks, oh my gosh, I'll absolutely in a heartbeat because it's.
I never thought about that when you slice that meat, it's going to make that fish easier to fold up so a catfish can get it in its mouth.
Yeah.
And well, you're not removing the meat, but you're making three thinner pieces rather than one thick one.
Right.
And so the catfish would be more likely to pick it up.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I never...
That's just my only problem I've ever run into, it seems like.
Yeah, I just never thought of it, you know.
It took me a long time to figure out how they were swallowing it, because I'm like, I'm not removing the backbone. You know, I'm doing the true butterfly manner.
Right.
You know, because some guys butterfly, but they remove the entire backbone, so you just have the two flaps of meat there, and that's it. But
yeah, I'm not
the proper way is like what you're talking about. That
I'm not big on that section. We used to have... The only time I ever do anything with the backbone, we used to take these little pieces of pipe, and when we were trolling a fish, we would make a cut right by the tail and then go in and try and remove the backbone itself. Not
right.
butterflying the fish,
right.
but just slide that pipe over the backbone, break it off so that we could take the backbone out and it would allow the fish to undulate in the water.
Right.
Undulate, I like that word.
I like that.
So it would give them that extra swimming motion, make it softer so it wasn't so rigid.
Yeah.
And that worked really good back when I used to do, you know, professional tournament fishing and trolling. I would remove the backbone of a lot of fish when I trolled them.
Yeah, and it's very, very popular and it's super successful. It's just, I just would much rather.
But I never butterflied him because it made him spin in the water.
Plus, Helen Keller is really terrible with a knife, so I get sometimes a little nervous filleting fish unless I'm actually chunking.
Yeah. Yep. So,
you know, I'm just terrible at it.
But anyway, anywhere out in the middle harbors now. The big thing is further south you go, it's not getting better. It's almost getting worse.
For the tarpon,
It seems like the tarpon are from the northern 20-foot hole, the 22-foot hole.
Actually, just a little bit closer to like marker 2.
Well, marker 1 is...
Yeah, but even marker 2,
really, all the way up here
there's been some really good groups of ladyfish right there in between marker 2 and marker 1. Remember when we were doing the Spanish mackerel a couple years ago?
Yep.
That's what they're doing right now. There's a couple good wads there kind of scattered across because there's a separate little scum line that's been there for probably about a week now.
All right, if you want to figure out a good place to go for it, I'll give you guys a hint. And you have to learn how to read a chart. And you're not looking specifically, when you see the chart of the harbor, look for the little lines in it with the bottom contours. And most fish, like a lot of the bait fish, especially as that tide's been going out, they're going to fall into a little deeper water. So look at the contour lines and see where the deeper parts of the water are there. And there's a little finger of deeper water that comes up from the holes and goes right between marker 1 and ponds, extending north of it about half, three quarters away, just almost right up to marker 2. And when you
see
that,
something new.
When you see that contour line, that's going to give you a really good idea where that water's going to boil up, where the bait have been hiding, and why those fish are there. If when
That's
you're reading
cool.
a chart, don't just look at the depth numbers and stuff and don't look at the land. Read the contour on the bottom. That's why you have a chart, not a map.
Right.
And look for those places where the fish are likely to run, and it's going to be in those contours.
Well, and I see those contour lines all the time, but I've never, like you said, never bothered to look at them. I'm looking at the depths.
And
so that's pretty cool. I got to learn something new today.
Well, it's going to tell you it's deeper.
Yeah.
I mean, the numbers are there, but the problem is all you're seeing is a bunch of random patterned numbers around it, and you're not looking for the pattern on the run of the fish. You do it all the time down where you fish. You know where those cuts are, where the deeper spots in the bottom are, and that's where you fish.
Right.
But
sometimes there's subtleties even down there that I'd overlook just because it's
Subtle.
Subtle.
But the big thing, what made me successful when I was doing the trips, was studying the charts and looking for the contour, looking for where are these fish going to run? If they're coming up in this area, what's the most likely spot?
Right.
And that makes most likely spot. And the water will swirl because it'll go down water.
And even only a couple inches is a huge ordeal with water movement. It's just like air.
I'll give you a clue, this is at least 2 feet.
Yeah, but you put one finger in front of your mouth and blow, it changes the wind direction entirely.
Yep.
And you move that finger and blow again,
causes
totally
cavitation, causes swirling.
So you're talking a couple feet, that's huge, but even if you talk a couple inches, that's still pretty darn big.
Because the water all moves at the same time. The water on the top, the bottom, left, and right, that water is all moving forward exactly the same. And it's got to arrive at the other spot at the same point. So when it goes down in a dip, it's going to go down, but it's got to come back up. And it's when it comes back up that other side, all that movement through that hole creates a eddy,
yeah,
kind of a swirling motion. And we're not, if you were in it as a swimmer, a diver, you may notice it. But picture if you were a lot smaller.
But we're still talking subtleties.
Yeah. If you're a lot smaller, think what that would do if you were only 2 inches long.
Right.
It takes a lot less to affect how you swim and where you go and what you do than, a 180-pound person or 200-pound
person. It's just like fishing like the Almorada hump or the Marathon hump. I mean, those are drastic changes, but it draws in and pulls bait to it and pulls nutrients to it and forms a huge uprising. So even a little tiny 1 foot, 2 foot, 6 inch, that's still giant when you're talking plankton.
Oh, yeah. But look at it this
baby
way.
Baby fish.
We're talking in those depths, many feet, and in the harbor, in that area, it's only 10 to 12 foot deep, and then it drops and comes back up. So that extra water's got to fall, and then it's got to be compressed back.
Right.
It makes a big deal.
Well, and it still would be, I mean, you're not going to see it on the surface as drastic as you would say, like the humps down there. You can actually see some of those water currents coming up.
Right, you won't see it.
But it's still, relative to size, though, you're talking 12 feet of water and a 2 foot drop. You're talking 400 feet of water and 75 foot drop.
Yeah.
It's very close to relative, almost.
Yeah, it's similar. So anyway, these are kind of little tricks, nonsense that may come in handy out there. But the tarpon fishing is really, really good right now on that incoming tide right out there in the harbor. And if you don't want to throw, you don't want the hassle of going to get the ladyfish, and you want to do it a little more skill and ability versus the fish and get the artificials, the swimming mullets still go into DOA rules the world yet.
Yes.
Bait busters, swimming without mullets. I'm going to bring rattle trap in on that and storm lures, the storm swim baits. Now, storm is encroaching on DOA's mainstay for as far as that. I don't know why the power baits aren't, but the storm, just the plastic baits seem to still be outdoing the power bait. And I don't know why. I don't know if because everybody's throwing the storm. It's unbelievably popular right now.
Right.
I mean, every time we order, we double our orders. And it's just more and more people buying them and more people catching fish. But the storm swim baits are hot right now.
Absolutely.
I'm still going to put DOA as number one.
And you know what the funny part that amazes me about that? Take a look at the bait buster.
The dumbest looking thing you've ever seen.
It's just like
your
life. The Terrorize or the bait buster are both basically
nothing.
Nothing. They're a piece of plastic cut in the shape of a fish, literally.
Yeah. But now DOA does use, if it looks like a fish, it's got ground up fish in it, in the plastic.
Right.
And it looks like a shrimp, it has ground up shrimp in the plastic.
But it's,
I
still
understand why DOA is, but they're not, when you look at them, it just looks like a dopey plastic fish.
Right. It's so subtle, so simple. And even when you retrieve it through the water, you just can't feel a great deal of vibration. You reel it in under the surface and look at it, and whether you're jigging it or retrieving it, there's not a whole great deal of phenomenal movement that just makes you go, that's really fishy.
Let's kiss this. Keep it simple, stupid.
Absolutely.
And we're going to kiss this one and say DOA number one. And for some reason or another, Storm is running on their heels.
Oh, yeah.
I doubt if they're going to surpass DOA, but Storm is probably your number two choice, any of the Storm swim baits. For the tarpon out in the harbor, go to the 4-inch to 5-inch to 6-inch.
Right.
In the canals, you got to drop down to 3 and 4 inch.
Right.
But out in that harbor, get the bigger storms. And, you know, I'd start throwing the DOA, and if it's not producing, you know, give it 40, 50 casts. If it doesn't produce, switch to a storm.
Absolutely.
And it could be just the different colors. DOA has all their colors, and then storms come out with a bunch of different colors. So
right.
It might be a color variance. It could be just, I don't know, it's supposed to make us crazy. We're not supposed to understand all this.
Right.
You know, that could be just the fish's way of saying, ha ha.
Exactly. So, this makes us crazy.
But a lot of Spanish mackerel out there. Remember, excellent eating fish the day you catch it. If it's going to be a long day, you're not going home in time for dinner and not up to cooking dinner, don't keep the mackerel.
Right.
Catch and release if you're not going to cook them that night. If you're going to cook them that night, average of 1.5 fish per person. If you got 2 people, keep 3 mackerel. You know, 4 people, you're going to want 5, maybe
right.
6.
Maybe 6, yeah.
But
depends on the size of them.
Yeah, and if you got a lot of hush puppies and coleslaw and all that other kind of stuff, you're probably not going to eat as much of the fish. If you're like me and Terry, we cook them up, and we don't eat hardly anything else, so we're probably doing 2 per person anyway. But
they're great, they're absolutely phenomenal fresh, but totally different animal when you freeze them.
Yeah, I wouldn't freeze a Spanish mackerel. What a waste of a fish.
Yeah.
I want my beef frozen. I don't like... I honestly would rather go to a place that I know is flash frozen the beef. That way I know it's been taken care of. It's hard like a rock. I want it thawed out. I don't want anything getting in it. You
right.
know, I like the ice, and then I want it thawed out and cooked properly. But, you know, I'm not big on all that fresh stuff. I'm sorry. No. Freeze the stuff. It's good for me. I like it. But with my mackerel, no. Anyway, I don't know where else to go with this. I think that's about it for this radio fishing. You?
Yeah, I think so. We got to share some neat information. I got to learn something new.
All right.
I like it.
So.
Up this morning before the sun, grab my gear to get some fishing done. Jump in my pickup, give her a crank. I gotta talk with Fishin' Frank. Fishin' Frank is the guy who'll know where the redfish and the tarpon go. From your boat or from the bank, the man to see is Fishin' Frank. 'Cause he's got the tackle and the know-how too, and more than willing to share with you. The guys with the most fish in their tanks have surely been to Fishin' Frank's. You gotta go to Fishin' Frank's, the one who knows his Fishin' Frank.
And thank you all for listening. This is Fishin' Frank in the chair, and Robert across from me. And we'll be back, let's see, today's Thursday. It's tomorrow morning with the Area Fishing Report. So stay tuned. Same fish channel, same fish time.
Nice.
Yeah, but it'll be close. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye-bye.